The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 283. I hope you're doing well out there, and I want to thank you for checking out this episode, and I have been looking forward to releasing this episode for quite a while, because my guest is an individual that's been on not one, but two of my favorite television shows of all time. I'm going to be joined by Jill Redding. She's an actress that spent some time on The Wire playing Dolores, the barkeep, if you will, in the second season of The Wire. And she also appeared on an episode of Homicide, Life on the Street, and has been in a bunch of other projects too. But if I may, I'd like to talk real quickly about those two television programs. I'll start with Homicide, Life on the Street. I discovered it around 2010 when WGN out of Chicago was showing reruns at noon through the week. And one afternoon I sat down and I clicked on Homicide and I said to myself, I remember my brother really liked this show. He watched it when it was originally on. And so I gave it a try. And the thing that I liked about it, it was very different. It was very unique because it's the homicide police. They show up after the crime happened. And I thought that was a unique twist. And, you know, the characters were so deep and so three-dimensional. They weren't, you know, stereotypical by any stretch of the imagination. And I really fell in love with that show. So obviously, fast forward about 1 year, and I had to try the other David Simon television show, The Wire. And that, my friends, is a fantastic show. It's so deep. It's got lots of layers. The characters are very interested and they're flawed and oh, it was fantastic. I say beyond a shadow of a doubt that The Wire is the greatest police cop show ever. And let me just tell you as a side note, that statement causes a big argument in my family as my cousin disagrees with me and feels that The Shield is the greatest cop show ever. Look, I'm not going to get into that debate right here, right now. We'll just say, you know, my cousin can be wrong. Anyways, so with that, ladies and gentlemen, Jill is coming on here right after I throw it to a quick break. And before that, I got to thank my sponsor. So I'd like to thank, of course, right now, World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they've got everything you need for your comic book fandom. I mean, single issues, graphic novels, collections, collectibles, toys, posters, thousands on top of thousands of back issues. You name it, they got it. So you need to stop on over to the store if you're in the Central Ohio area and say hi to the fine folks over at World's Greatest Comics. But do not worry, if you're not in Central Ohio, you can still check out the store. They have a great website, wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And no matter how you interact with the fine folks from the store, whether it's in person or whether it's over the internet, please let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD Cast. All right, with that out of the way, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Jill Redding. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to an episode that I have been waiting on for quite a while. I must confess, I'm excited to have this guest joining me. And of course, let's not waste any more time. welcome to the show, Jill Redding. Jill, how are you this evening?
I'm great. I feel wonderful. It's wonderful.
You've instilled some great life advice off air that I really think you should share with everyone, because I think it's really sound advice.
Okay. Well, if you want stuff, you need just to hang out with old people, because they're all getting rid of their stuff and you could just take their stuff and then you don't have to buy it. You can just, because they want to get rid of it. So hang out with old people and take their stuff. They might have some good stuff that you want.
So if you're looking for that lawnmower, don't go to Home Depot. Just hang out with somebody that's elderly. Yeah. They'll give it to you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Catch him when he's tired and just finished mowing the lawn. He might forget to put it away. I guess that would be wrong, though, to do it that way. Yeah.
I think that's theft, Joe. I don't think we should promote that.
That's true. That would be theft. You could wave and promise to come back next week and cut his grass, but if you didn't come back, it would still be theft. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We're still working the kinks out, ladies and gentlemen. We'll come back to this later.
What we're really thinking about is all those old DVDs that you want to get your hands on and be able to watch, and you don't want to have to go buy them. So when old people are giving stuff away, just if they have a yard sale, give them a quarter.
Okay. Like, there you go. Well, Jill, before we get into your many roles, including roles on two of my favorite television shows of all time, let's just start off real quickly. You're based in Maryland, correct?
I am, yes.
Are you a lifelong resident of Maryland? Were you born and raised in the
state? No, I was conceived in Boston. And then my parents moved to Maryland when I was 9 months old. Well, they moved to Washington. So, no, I wasn't born here, but I was raised here. Okay. D.C. for 5 years and then Maryland. So I've been in Maryland for over 70 years. So, yeah.
Did you have a large family, a small family?
I have, I'm one of four daughters, girls, and we all went off and had family. And I have two daughters, four grandchildren, and six great-grands. I'm married for the second time, and he has some kids, too, that have babies. I don't always count them, but we could be up to about 20 if we tried. So,
it's certainly a large family.
Yeah, they're not all around here, but... Okay. Mine are around here. Mine are all within 20 minutes of me, which is why I don't live in Florida.
Okay. Well, I mean, there could be other reasons why you don't live in Florida, but I digress.
Well,
I mean,
no. But I'm
wacky things happen in Florida, Jill.
We didn't go off as old people and go someplace else because they're all here. It's not like they grew up and went, you know, to Cincinnati and Washington State and, you know, California. They're here. So I'm here thinking that they're still. They still like me. We'll see what happens Sunday.
Yes. That's a very important day, people. You can't forget Mother's Day.
No, you can't. No. I wrote a poem this year for them, which I'm going to give each a copy of it.
Do you like to dabble in poetry?
No, but I'm cheap.
Good answer. I guess.
No, I wrote them all something. No, I don't dabble. I wrote a song once, and that's been a while ago. But yeah,
okay.
I do a lot of things. I write. My big business was murder mysteries, and I own a company that does them. But this last year we didn't do any, and I always write a big show twice a year for a thing in the Poconos that I write like a 50 characters. It's like a book. Almost by the time you write it and do all that. So, yeah, I guess I can write.
So is it safe to say that you've always been creative, even as a little kid?
I was on the stage when I was about five or six. My father would write comedy shows, and my sister and I would perform them on the front. The theaters used to have a thrust, the movie theaters. Mm-hmm. Had a place you could walk. They weren't just screens up against the wall. And so people could be out there on the thrust of the movie theater in front of the, and we did shows on Saturday mornings.
And that's what started the acting bug, huh?
That's what started the acting bug. My parents joined Little Theater, and we went from there. I did a lot of community theater, and then somebody said, oh, we want to pay you money. and I haven't done community theater since then. I'm a SAG member for over 20 years, and I was doing stuff long before that, so yeah.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the murder mystery theater. So how long have you been doing that?
I did my first one back in the early 90s, and then we performed on trains and boats and things like that. And so we do a murder mystery on a train. It's been fun. We did that one in New Freedom, Pennsylvania for, I guess it was 15 years. We've got another one that we're not going back to that ended before COVID. So that was a show we did for 14 years to the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And we do boats. We did the Black Eyed Susan out of Baltimore for 15, 16 years. I've been around.
And would that be
Mike Barton?
Mr. Barton.
Yeah. I had met Mike. He was doing a church thing where he was, it was the winter time. It was winter scene that they were doing. It wasn't the one that they do in the spring. And I met him and said, so can you do improv? And he said, I guess. And I said, okay. And I turned to our producer at the time who was doing the show with him and said, I think we should hire him. And we did. And then when our producer left the company, he split it between Mike and I. And Mike's the long distance driver. So I did not want to be driving five people to Western Maryland. So you know, we kind of split it that way. And Mike's gone on. He has a nice company, the Foul Players of Perryville. Yeah. And mine's called JR Entertainment. So we pull from the same pool of actors and just send them out to work and go with them and jump up and down and have fun. And they give us something to eat and they pay us money. And we get the boat ride or the train ride.
It's like a good deal.
It's not bad.
Yeah. And you did say, obviously, this past year, things pretty much were shut down.
You couldn't get close enough to have people sure. on a boat or a train. It's just too intimate a space to do it. Mm-hmm. I think they're finally going to start the Western Maryland up maybe in the fall, and my train might be able to hire us in the fall, but we can't do something masked for 20 people when we're used to doing it not masked for 70 people. Mm-hmm. And it just isn't economically feasible to do it. So
yeah, understand. It's changed life for everybody. I mean,
it did.
You know,
it did. I think of all those actors. Well, the other thing it did was it made actors who are far away from here coming down and auditioning for movies and stuff that they never would have before. So it kind of took away from, kind of dried up us a little bit, the actors that were local that were looking to, you know, do more movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The actors are out there not working just like we're not working. So mm-hmm. it's been rough. So you have... You're contained in your little space. We're not near each other.
I am
less than 3 feet from my screen. However, that doesn't offend you.
The funny thing you mentioned about that, Joe, was this has changed how I podcast too. When I would talk to local people here in Columbus, Ohio, or in the Central Ohio area, I would meet with them face to face, and we would talk and not do this whole, you know, telecommunication, Zoom thing. Yeah. We would talk more because it's more natural and it was fun. And so, yeah, it's changed. Like to be very honest, look, the other day, I keep a mileage book. I haven't put any mileage on my car for podcasting since March, like March 3rd or something. So it's changed my experience here of podcasting as well. It certainly is radically different. And hopefully soon it'll go back to the way it was. I
hope so. Because I'd done some with Mike early on with another group that he was doing podcasts with, and it was fun. I'd never done anything like this, telecommunicating at all, mm-hmm. until all of a sudden, oh, look what we can do. And it's changed. It's changed a lot of things.
Well, let's roll into one of your roles. Mrs. Krebs. Who was a lady on Homicide: Life on the Street, season 3. The episode is entitled "The Old and the Dead." How was it working with two of the leads on that show, Daniel Baldwin and Kyle Secor.
It was okay till we actually got going, and then they said whatever they wanted. And at that point in my life, I hadn't developed all of the improv skills I have now, but I'm pretty outspoken. So I had to, you know, like really pay attention, because they were saying things that they cut my, well, before I went on screen, I knew they'd cut my good line anyway. The good line that's not in there was the line that said, when they said, so could this be, I'm sorry, I can't even think of the guy's name who died. And I said, I don't know, it didn't look like that the last time I saw him. Well, I think they decided that I was going to get too big a laugh over that or something, because they cut it out of the script. When I got to there in my trailer and they gave me the script, I went, where's my line? I mean, I still had Ken Harvey have the thigh bone, but the other line was, he didn't look like that last time I saw him. And they'd drawn a little line through it. That was what I joined SAG with. So I'd done a lot of background work at this point, but I hadn't done any of that concentration, watch where your foot goes, because it's going to go right there again when you say that line, because they're going to run it, you know, 75 times. So that was my first speaking role that I ever had in a movie. I'd been acting. I'm a stage actress, basically, most of the time. So it was fun. It was bitter cold. It was my birthday.
Oh, really?
It was my birthday, and it was just frigid. I don't know if you could tell that from seeing it. And we walked over, and they showed me the set, took me back to my trailer. You know, they have the trailers, and they have a little nameplate on it, and they can wipe that off and put the next name on the trailer. So in the morning, it's Mrs. Krebs. In the afternoon, it's, you know, somebody else. So we went out and saw the set, and they gave me this dog. And then they went away. And it's Daniel Baldwin's dog. So I'm holding this dog who wanted to pee on every piece of equipment in this yard. And I'm walking along holding on to this dog, and everybody's gone. And I'm thinking, I don't think I'm the one that's supposed to be in charge of this dog. I mean, I know they want me to bond with the dog, but I'm not sure it's my responsibility to keep him from peeing on the light fixtures. And then they buried this meat so he'd dig in the right spot. So that's where he wanted to go, because they put it there. It was not a small dog. He Harvey was a good-sized dog. And I went back to the trailer for a little bit. Then I came back, and everybody was drinking coffee. And I'm there holding this dog again. And I said something, and they said, oh, I'm sorry, we didn't hear. We're over here. We have drinking coffee. And I went, I'd like a cup of coffee. Oh, we're drinking cappuccino. And I said, well, I drink cappuccino. I'd never drank a cappuccino in my life. So they got me a cappuccino. I drank this cappuccino. We are behind an abandoned house. It's just a shell for us to be in with electric heaters and stuff. There's no plumbing. There's no nothing. I drank this cappuccino. I thought I was going to die. My stomach said, you don't want to drink this. And there was no bathroom. I couldn't run to my trailer because we were there ready to film. And I'm dying. And then at one point I'm holding the dog, and I'm standing way over in the corner, and they're testing everything, and I'm trying to hold the dog, and I'm saying, stand here, stop it. The sound guy goes, what is that noise? And they said, Jill, stop talking. I'm talking right into the mic going, quiet, quiet, stop it, stop it. Because he just wanted to run and play. And it's a beautiful dog, but, you know, and whenever his owner would come on the set, he would go crazy and jump up and down, and then he'd give him a hand signal and he'd be quiet. I thought, why didn't you do that all day long while I'm managing your dog? I mean, I was a good half hour managing his dog, but it was a wonderful experience. I mean, I had a great time. Now, you've seen the episode, so you know there was a full face picture of me.
Yes.
My mother said after she watched it, she said, well, it's a shame they didn't get a picture of your face. And I went, okay. So Yes, episode season 3, huh? I'll have to find that.
Yeah, and you know what? I actually was going to ask you about the weather conditions because it looked like it was frigid out.
It was probably 15 degrees. It was so cold. And I had these hand warmers they were my own gloves I was wearing, and I had hand warmers in them. And so when I was done, my gloves were kind of a light colored glove, and they were black, you know, from handling the dog and all that. But I tried to give the hand warmers to somebody. Well, of course, the hand warmers are black. And I went in there and said, does anybody want these hand warmers? And it's kind of like, ew, that's terrible. I said, it's from me holding the dog leash. My hand wasn't black, but these hand warmers, you know, nobody wanted my used hand warmers. But no, it was bitter. You could probably see the steam coming when we were talking. But I do remember that they jumped around a little bit and I had to improvise with them. But they were nice. They were nice. And they gave me cappuccino.
Okay.
And I know now not to drink that.
It doesn't sit well.
No.
Did that experience on Homicide lead to you getting an opportunity on The Wire, in which you were the character Dolores in season 2? And seven or eight episodes.
I was in, I get residuals for 10.
10.
They only acknowledge 7.
Okay.
I get paid for 10. So I don't know why the other ones aren't acknowledged or whatever, but I try to put them on IMDb and, you know, they only put on it's 6 or 7, whatever they put on. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I was in 10 episodes. The last one I didn't speak. I love the director the director hired me, that directed the first 2 seasons. I was, I auditioned for, it's the same casting director. So yes,
okay.
I got called in by the same casting director, and she really likes me. But I did, I was auditioning for Nikki's mother.
Oh, okay.
When she stomps on the floor and doesn't want to feed him breakfast and he's got to get out, and then she goes ahead and feeds Ziggy breakfast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I auditioned for that role, and that's the one I got called back to do. And I'm sitting in the waiting room, and I'm seeing the gals that are coming back to audition for. When I got there, the assistant gave me the sides for the barmaid. And she said, you're going to read for the barmaid. I said, am I still reading for Nikki? Oh, yeah. But we're giving you this. And the line was, keep your shirt on, hoss. And that was the line, a simple line. So they were forever coming back from lunch. We waited an hour before everybody, you know, you get there, you want to get there, 20 minutes before at minimum, you know, so you can relax and look at your line again and do it. And they were late coming back. So I was nervous at that point. And I went in, gave the line, gave Nikki's mother's line, and the casting person said, okay. And the director said, no, she's reading for Dolores. She's reading for the barmaid. The casting director says, she doesn't have the sides for that. And I took up the little piece of paper and I said, I got him. And I did the line, and he wanted me. He wanted me to be the barmaid. And I questioned him about it later. I said, oh, I see, because when we got to the bar, it was an actual bar. They bought somebody's bar. And I looked across at this woman, and we were approximately the same age. And I said, the only difference is I probably weigh 60 pounds more than she does. Yeah, she was a skinny little thing. So I said to him, oh, is it because I look like the barmaid? And he said, no, you know, I wanted you. I wanted you for this role. And then he let me do whatever I wanted.
Was that, was the director Ed?
Ed Bianchi.
Ed Bianchi?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm tied to him through something else. I guess he directed something for Homicide: Life on the Street. I think he did a couple episodes of that too. But we're just connected. When you go on IMDb, it tells you, if you pick a person, oh, you did such and such with this person. Mm-hmm. You may never have seen him. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful experience. I had so much fun being Dolores. The first day, a terrible snowstorm. First day of shooting. The shooting was in South Baltimore, down by the, obviously down near the docks. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I drove down there to see how to get over the bridge under the tunnel and to this place without me getting too lost. This is pre-GPS. But I get up that morning and my license plate was embedded in the snow in front of my house. So that's how deep the snow was. And wow. I had to get down there. And I got there and it was a good experience. And one of the best things you can have as an actor is when somebody's bringing you to set and they keep saying into their mic, I'm with Jill. I'm walking with Jill. Jill's with me. I've got Jill. I'm walking with Jill. That's one of the greatest words you can hear is I'm walking with Jill. I've got her. So that's my walking with Jill.
Is that because you've made it when you're hearing your name announced over that walkie-talkie? Is that what that signifies? You're here. I'm here.
You're here. You're one of the people on the call list. You're not an extra that they're running in and saying, go stand over there, which I'd done for years. I went to the auction after The Wire closed, and they had a pamphlet and they showed all the movies that had been filmed in Baltimore. So I was just checking them off. It was like 35 that I had done something in. But of course, the Homicide: Life on the Street was my first speaking role. And then I was so fortunate to get the role of Dolores. We put a little addition on the back of our house. It had a sign that said, engineered by Tom Thompson and financed by Dolores. Out there on the porch. It was just, and everybody was so nice. And I was one of the few women there. Well, with the bar scene, I was the woman that was there. There wasn't, so the makeup and the hair people took me in so I could sit with them and be, have some company, because that was it. The end of the first day of shooting is this guy comes up to me and he said, you're the bartender. And I said, yeah. Well, I had a hat when I came in and they made me take it off because it had and it was telling me what was on it. And this was a 14-hour day and I'm kind of staring at this guy and somebody walks by and goes, she's the actress. She doesn't own the bar. Because I'm listening to this guy who's intently telling me where to find his hat, and I'm thinking, I don't know where to find his hat. It's not, you know. And when they were setting things up in the morning, the bar had been closed because they bought it, so they had the bottles set up, they had the whole bar set up, but there was no way for me to get behind the bar after they had set the lights up.
Okay.
They only at the back side of the bar where you would go out and serve people and hit the ladies room or whatever was closed off, and it was packed with people. And so I couldn't get from behind the bar. So that meant any break that everybody else was given and took to reset lights and stuff like that, I was behind the bar. So I finally figured out that I could climb over the bar if I could get my leg up onto the little refrigerator. And apparently they didn't like that because two episodes later, they built a little portable bridge that they could set up so that I wouldn't be saying, just grab anything and pull, or, you know, can you give me a push up? Because I'm only 5 foot tall. So it's, you know, me behind the bar. That was, yeah. Finally, they built this little couple steps and a little bridge that I could come across. And there was always somebody there to help me because they didn't want me to fall.
Yeah.
But the director, I think, first two episodes were filmed together with Biatchi, and then the second one was filmed together with a woman. And then, so maybe the fifth episode. And I said to the director, I said, so what do you want? And he said, oh, you're fine. But I think I'll have you out here serving drinks with a tray. And I thought to myself, oh, great. I've never waited on anything. I'm the clumsiest person on the face of the earth. And I said, well, I can't like get from behind the bar. Oh, never mind. Yes. Because I'm thinking I'm going to have to go out there and carry a beer around. And then another guy complained. I said to my husband, my current husband was married to a woman that ran that was a barmaid. And I said to him, And he was a musician, so he'd been out in that world a lot more than I ever had. And he said, just don't take any shit off anybody. And he said, and I thought, okay, Dolores isn't going to take any shit off anybody. And I didn't. And I had a good time. And when there was laughter, I laughed, and I just really was myself. And it was because they let me be myself. They actually changed lines in the script when I'd get there, and lines had been crossed out and new lines had been written for the next episode. I know I wasn't in the 10th episode. And when I went there for the 9th episode, there was no script for the 10th episode. I went, oh, did Dolores die? But they, what happened was they sold, they turned the bar into housing. So the last two episodes, when I come out of the bar and lock the bar door, there was no real inside to the bar anymore. The bar part was gone. It was stripped down to the old wood that I guess the places had been built probably turn of the century, this street that we were on. Uh-huh. And so there was no insides to the bar. It just all came out in that curtain call episode, which is one thing I love about The Wire, is that every season had a curtain call episode. That last episode in every season was a curtain call. And I've never seen that done other places. I mean, sometimes they wind things down, storylines or something, but they actually made the effort to give that to the actors. And I thought that was just wonderful.
Did you ever get an opportunity to meet David Simon, or was he never down during filming or anything?
I didn't meet the police either. Okay. Well, they came to the episode once when they found the girls in the can, but yeah. I never even got to meet them. So the 12th episode was the curtain call episode. And I got there because I was going to lock the bar, and I was second shooting of the B team, not the A team, but the B team. And they said, well, Joe, you want to go to lunch? And I said, sure, where is it? Well, go down here, turn the block, go down, you'll see the catering truck, and it's in the building. So I went up to the catering truck, and I put my little tray up there and told them what I wanted, and I turned and I went in the building, and I went upstairs. They had extras holding, and I said, well, I'm not going there. Oh, I better go to extras holding. So I went up the stairs, and I took a space at the table and set my tray down with a long table, and I was right near the door where I'd come up the steps and in there, and I set the tray down, and I said, I was sitting across from McNulty, right across him, and I said, I'm such a fan of The Wire, and I saw the catering truck out front, and I knew I could just walk up there and get some food and come up here and see everybody. And he's looking at me, and he's moving his eyes from side to side going, who can I tell that there's this crazy woman sitting at the table here with us? We don't know who she is. When down a few seats, somebody goes, it's Dolores. And all these British accents, but oh, Dolores, it's nice to meet you. I've seen you all. Oh, Dolores. It's okay. And I'm like, because that was fun, because they didn't know who I, because they'd never seen me, except if they'd been watching the show. You know, because they started showing the show before we finished filming. Mm-hmm. They didn't wait till it was all in the can to start the season. We went and saw the first episode at the Senator movie theater while we were still filming. So
I was going to say, predominantly the people that you worked with were people like James and Pablo, who played Mickey and Ziggy and those folks in that storyline. Would Chris Bauer be also?
Oh yeah, Chris Bauer.
Frank?
Chris is the one that ratted me out as being Dolores. Yeah. it's Dolores. But I worked with them. I think some of the guys came in just that one time to talk about the girls in the can when they came to figured out they might know something about, because it was on their, you know, property. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't feel that season ties in until they really become fans of it. And then they realize how integral it is to the whole storyline. Because they think, oh, you know, it went on. But it's always the druggies and the police. And then it's, you add the docs, or you add the kids, or you add the newspaper, or you add the political side of it. But it's always the druggies and the police. That's runs through it. But they have other, they bring other things into it, which is, I think, is what makes it such a great show. Yes. It's got all the elements of seeing all the things that are, and it all comes together. You see something in season one, and then it makes sense in season three, and you're going, of course, the big, one of my favorite scenes is the big fuck you scene.
Yeah. That's, with the refrigerator door.
Yeah. Yeah. That one. I love that scene. And I laughed myself sick when I watched that. It was so funny. And I said, that is so funny, so horrible and so funny, you know? And I tell people, well, that's one of my favorite scenes. Really? I said, well, you haven't seen the show. But it ties into something that had happened in a storyline. I guess it was the same season, but it was several episodes earlier. And it all pulls things, little things just all come back and come together, and things that happened at one point affect somebody, you know, a couple of scenes later, a couple of episodes later, because the druggies and the police all were all through the whole thing. So something that they did in one episode might reflect how they were in an episode later on. I love the whole show. I love the kids. I love episode season four with those young people. Oh my God. They were phenomenal.
I feel that this show, The Wire, is the greatest cop show ever because there are so many layers, because there are those other storylines that, and you're absolutely right, tie back into kind of what the main point is. I will say, to me, one of the, and I'm going to admit something on my own podcast, I don't think I've ever admitted, Bubbles' storyline, when it concludes, I openly wept because he was such a great character. You rooted for him. You rooted for him. Yep. No matter how many times he messed up, every time he turns into a damn scumbag, but you still root for him.
Yep.
And to see how that ended up was fantastic. I don't want to spoil it, but it was great.
It was powerful. Mm-hmm. To see that, I agree. In fact, I'm getting the chills now. It's not because my room is cold, but no. When I think of that and that last scene, it's like, wow. And now one of my other favorite characters, of course, is Omar. You know,
of course.
Omar coming. There's a little thing here. It's a group. The Wire. All the pieces matter, and it's local here to Maryland. And they comment on things all the time and stuff like that. And you know, somebody will take a scene apart and, you know, post something about it or whatever. And they had a little thing about Omar not too long ago. It made me laugh because every time I'd say Omar coming, it didn't matter to me what horrible thing he was going to do at that point. It's like, damn, there he comes.
Yeah.
But he was, I never met any of the drug people either. Just the longshoremen. I was their barmaid. I have a little group of people that follow me and comment to me. And, you know, I had a gentleman last year send me some picture postcards of scenes I didn't even remember that were on there. I guess he got the clips off of, you know, a couple of me laughing, and he sent them to me, and he drew on the envelope and said, I hope you enjoy these. And I sent one off to a casting person, but the rest of them I've just kept because I thought that was very nice of him. I'm also a realtor, and this guy's out in California talking to a guy I'm showing houses to. And he said, yeah, my realtor was on The Wire. Yeah, she played Dolores. Your realtor's Dolores. And I thought, well, that's kind of neat that somebody would, because it's such a small part, even though it's integral to the whole second season. I mean, all those episodes, I'm not just jump in and never see me again, but it's nice to think that people remember you. It's a good feeling. The scene with me cursing at in the beginning when Ziggy's going to expose himself.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The line was, hell is you doing? That was my line. Hell is you doing? We rehearsed this thing with cameras. We rehearsed the thing with lights. We rehearsed it, you know, back and forth, yada, yada, this direction, that direction, everything else comes down. It's my scene. There's cameras on me, and I'm looking up going, Yeah, how's that line? Hell Is You Doing was not in my brain. It just wasn't there. I don't know if it was, it can't be stage fright. I mean, I'm usually not afraid of that kind of thing, but it just was gone. So I just started cursing at him. And then there was dead silence. I said, oh, they're going to fire you. What did you do? And Bianchi comes and he goes, I love it. And I said, what did I say? And there was this young girl who had tried to write down all these curse words that I'd said so that we could film the scene again. And then the band, as soon as I said that, the band broke in and I started dancing. And all of the guys at the bar were giving me tips. And that wasn't it. They brought them in the day before to rehearse that dance that they did that night, you know, and rehearse all those lines. They didn't bring me in. I didn't arrive there until the day we were shooting. They'd all come the day before and map that all out. So I was free to do what I wanted to do. So I'm dancing and he says, and you can dance too. And I don't dance. I'm the person that's sitting there enjoying the music and somebody said, hey, you want to dance? And I go, no, because I don't move my feet. So it was just a really good experience. And I learned a lot because I didn't know anything. I didn't know why you don't talk to the actor in the scene when there's a break. I just know you weren't supposed to. You're not supposed to catch their eye. You're not supposed to do anything. And don't speak to Mr. Pacino. That's a whole nother story. But they said and I knew not to do that. You know, I knew not to interrupt you. And I finally found out why. Because I had so much I had to do and do it the same way another 10 times or however many times we filmed it from whatever angle and stuff like that. When did I go over and talk to that guy? When did I lean on the bar? When did I wipe the bar? When did I, you know, serve that drink? And I had to go stand behind myself and over in the corner and just not ignore these guys that went, hey, how are you? Let's talk. I had to ignore them and I really felt bad about that. But I realized that's exactly what you have to do. That's, you know, you can't just visit. You have to be, and that's why you don't speak to I never speak to Mr. Pacino, apparently.
You know what? We'll save that story for another time, Jill. I wanna know that one, but we are going a little bit long, and so,
oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's A-okay. I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Jill for just one moment to talk about World's Greatest Comics. You hear me talk about the store time and time again on the PVD cast, but it's true. It is your one-stop shop for your comic book needs. I mean, they've got it all. So you need to stop on over to the store, especially if you're in Central Ohio. The street address is 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Now, for you listeners outside of Ohio, you could still check out the store. Just go over to their website, wgcomics.com, and you can find them on Facebook. Just look for @WGComics. But no matter how you interact with the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics, please let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD cast. So I'll just ask a real quick kind of follow-up question here then, because I think we've covered pretty much everything that I had wanted to know about The Wire. So what advice would you give any upcoming actor or actress if they came to you and wanted some advice? What would you say to them?
The advice for them to get into the business or just be when they're on set? Or
I'd say either.
Okay. Well, let's say that you've been through the process. They've hired you and you're going to do the role. You have to concentrate on and be the person that they want you to be throughout. You know, you can't just, I can't go in and out of roles. I can now. I couldn't then. I had to stay kind of being Dolores. But you have to listen, you have to concentrate, because even though you've got these lines and you know this person's going to say this and you're going to say that, they might not. So you have to be able to be flexible and to concentrate and to pay attention to what's going on around you and just have fun. Have a great time. It's a crazy, crazy business. I did the character in Game Change. I guess you saw that on that.
Yes.
So it's, yeah, you just have to roll with it but pay attention. Listen to and learn everything you can from watching other people. Because I was much too much of a stage actress when I went there. You know, but Dolores was such a character that it didn't hurt so much. You know, it wasn't so bad that I was the way I was. I wasn't meek at all. And I'm not. But sometimes you have to take that stage actress and set it aside and be the quiet talker, and because you've got the mic is right here. But just enjoy it and pay attention. And
do you have any upcoming projects that you're working on?
No, I've auditioned a lot through this pandemic. I now have this little thing in my what we call our pit room, which is the put it there room, so that I can do videos to audition. There's not much happening. Close a few times. The expression is to be pinned for a role that they're holding you for, but I haven't been cast. So nope, not right now. There's not anything. But there's three projects filming right here in the Baltimore, Washington, Virginia area that something might come up on, I hope.
Okay. Where can folks follow you online if they wanted to keep tabs on you? Do you have any social media or any websites?
I have the IMDb. I have my JR Entertainment, which I don't pay enough attention to, and then my just regular Facebook, Joel Redding on Facebook. That's it. I'm 78 years old. So to teach me this technology stuff, it's not easy. I do have an Instagram. I've been told I have an Instagram account.
Who set that up for you? One of the kids set you up with that?
No, one of my young friends. My kids are in their 50s, so that grandchildren give me more attention when it comes to technology, because they're 30-ish. So that helps, but no. Somebody said, well, you have to have a TikTok. And I said, no, I don't. And then somebody says, Jill, I just saw your name on Instagram. Do you have Instagram? And I said, I think I do. I think I do. No. And as an actor, you should have that kind of following and and stuff. But I don't.
Wow.
Maybe.
You know what? It's worked so well for you the way you're doing it now. Why change, right?
Well, yeah, except now they're asking.
Oh.
They're saying, we want to know what social media you have. So they want you to know that they can hire you, and you're going to say, oh, I'm going to be working on such and such. Once you're allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say it while they cast you. You're not allowed to open your mouth. You have to be quiet. You can't say I'm going to be on something. And then once you are, they want you to push it out on your social media. Mm-hmm. Who is that behind you? The Deadpool. Okay.
I'm in my office, Jill.
Are you in your pit room?
This is my pit room, yes, where I have comic book posters, wrestling paraphernalia, all kinds of strange stuff. So
we have a fun guy, but they went to Austria to do a movie over there, Vienna. Okay. And they'll be back, and it's Appletini's with Ken.
Okay.
That he would do on Monday nights, and you might enjoy dropping in on that sometime. Ken Arnold is the actor. But I don't know when Appletini is. I find it on Facebook or YouTube. One of those.
Okay. Jill, this has been an absolute blast. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you so very much for coming on. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Jill Redding. And I'd like to thank Jill for taking time out of her very busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. It was an honor to have somebody that's been on two of my favorite television shows, The Wire, Homicide: Life on the Street, Justified, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Those are like my favorites of all time. And to have Jill come on, it was just so awesome. I really do appreciate it. Thank you again, Jill. And it's time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you'd like to comment on this episode, or any episode for that matter. You can shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook and Instagram feeds. Just search for @pvdcast. And I'm even on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @pvdmvp. Well, maybe you'd like to tell some folks about the PVDcast. Well, let me fill you in on where they can hear it. They can hear it at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. It's also available through all of those major podcasting platforms. Just put PVDcast in the search engine of your favorite podcast platform. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. I also would like to let you know that you can listen to the weekly episode of the PVDcast through Facebook as well. I do a Facebook broadcast on Monday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's simulcast through my friends over at The Scene Snobs. So check out thescenesnobs.com to get all of the information on the PVDcast and all of the other great podcasts that are over there. I mean, you got the Three Geeks podcast, you got Twitching Upstream, you got all kinds of great podcasts. Just check out thescenesnobs.com. All right, well, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy. Production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2021.